I'm Jeremy Greer.
I'm Chris Mosier.
And this is Non-Human Biologics, the creepy but necessary podcast where Chris and I talk about every single episode of the TV show X-Files. And we're both kind of little freaks about it. We're both a little freaky about it, aren't we, Chris?
Yeah. Big time freaky about this one.
This is normally the part of the podcast where I would tell people, like, hey, this is the last episode. We're going to do a feedback episode, and you guys should write in for it. Except we've already done it. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to do it in like 3 days.
Unfortunately, the timing did not work out on this one. Unless you're already on, if you're getting this early.
You have a day. If you're getting
this. You have a day. You have, like, if you were listening to this the Monday that this episode comes out on the early release for Patreon. You got like a minute to get it in.
Speaking of Patreon, if you want to go sign up and support the show, patreon.com/monsterofthe week is the place to do so. As Chris mentioned, you can get episodes early. You can also get access to our community Discord server, which is tons of fun. Our watching channel now just looks like a CIA document because people are talking about some TV show and they don't want to spoil anybody.
Everything's in spoilers. It's everything's redacted. It's crazy.
Just everything is like, there's just pages of redacted nonsense in there. So, but you can go in there and talk about anything that you want to. So, that's fun. Chris, how have you been?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. Do you want to remind us what's been happening on the X-Files?
Yeah, sure. Last time on The X-Files, Mulder and Scully learned that you can just put someone else down as an organ donor and inherit their cock when they die if you want.
Oh, God.
Do the sticks go east or west or north or south? South, excuse me. I'm out of breath from that run. As always, the mystery remains, but one thing is certain. A broken cock is right twice a day.
This is a good time for me to make a proclamation, Chris.
Yeah.
So the last few episodes, we've gone, I would say, we've been pretty explicit.
Oh, sure.
We've been E for explicit.
Sure.
And on this episode, I think that we need to bring it back down. I think we need to be E for everyone.
Put the past behind us.
Yeah. I don't think we need to talk about BBLs or dual cocks or any of that stuff. We need to, like, imagine if your nephew...
Just pressing the backspace key rapidly on my notes.
Just imagine if your nephew was, like, sitting next to you while you were recording.
Sure.
That's kind of the attitude that I want to come into this as.
Yeah, well, that's why they don't let my nephew hang out with me.
Imagine if your nephew...
Yeah, I'm always treating him like a regular dude. I'm like, hey, man, what's up? And he's like, I'm three.
Yeah. I would like to play Fortnite, please. Is that a thing? How early do people start playing, like,
He doesn't
Fortnite?
Know about video games yet, so... Well, I still have a chance to swoop in there and fuck up his whole life.
Sounds like you've been a pretty terrible uncle.
Today
we're talking about The X-Files Season 1 Finale, Episode number 24, The Erlenmeyer Flask. Stakes are high during this thrilling conclusion as the agents get closer to the conspiracy and discover evidence of secret government experimentation with alien DNA. But the evidence and everyone who has seen it is quickly being eliminated. This aired on May 13th, 1994, was written by Chris Carter and directed by R.W. Goodwin. Sure enough, this is a pretty thrilling finale, I would say. Like,
yeah.
Especially after the last couple of like fucking stinker episodes that we've had.
I would have liked a little bit more build up to this. This was fine. It's not like this didn't have it. But I think you expect in the modern day for there to be a little bit more of that. At least in Supernatural, almost always the last two
would be
focused on the main story.
Not quite two-parters, but like would go into some big conclusion. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that this is a good conclusion to the first season, certainly. It just would have maybe felt more exciting if we had really been locked in for the last couple episodes. Instead, it's been, you know, weeks and weeks since the last time that we saw Deep Throat. And this isn't a complaint. I'm just about this episode. I just wish that we had gotten a little bit more. And I wonder if we will in the future get, you know, as we near season finales and mid-season finales and stuff like that, if things will be a little bit more, the deck will be more stacked.
That is my understanding, is that as the series progresses, it becomes much more focused on the myth arc episodes, less so on the Monster of the Week episodes.
We're kicking this motherfucker off with a hell of a car chase.
We are. I haven't seen a car get this much air since, like, fucking Evel Knievel, my man.
No.
Like, the very first thing that we see
skybound
is this like, fucking sedan just, like, catch 18 feet of air off of this hill in Washington, D.C. Yeah. This is hilarious. I love it so much.
And
the cop follows immediately along. Cop is not scared to catch air either. Cop car is just rocking as well. They're pursuing
they pursue this guy. They eventually kind of like corner him down by the docks somewhere, and the guy gets out of his car and tries to escape, but the cops immediately catch him and they just start beating his ass with billy clubs.
And this like seems like it's going to be really bad up until he grabs one of the billy clubs and then just beats all of their asses. Immediately just like gets his own back. Another cop tries to tase him. That doesn't work. He takes off running towards the water. Another cop shoots him, confirms the hit.
But, in the back.
But also, I mean, they're cops, right? Right. Like, right. So you expect this kind of behavior.
Right.
He doesn't even slow down. He just keeps running, jumps into the water, leaving behind just a little bit of green goop on the floor, on the whatever.
I hate, honestly, and I'm sorry to say it to the listeners, I hate dudes who leave green goop everywhere.
Do you know a lot of those guys? I mean, you're in that Boston area, so I know that's a big
green goop
kind of area.
I'm in the Boston area. We got a lot of green goopy guys.
Yeah, you guys love St. Patrick's Day up there to an uncomfortable degree. Yeah. That's what I'm hearing.
It's a little weird. It's treading on some grounds that I don't want to investigate.
The first dude I ever met that told me that he dyed his blood green for St. Patrick's Day, I was like, man, you do you. That's your bliss. Chase it. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
I don't even think they do that in Ireland, brother.
Yeah, I don't even think they care that much over there, my man. But like, I'm glad that you do.
Where's your stance on the IRA, brother?
Ooh, the main episode starts, and it's we're gonna have like a running theme, and I don't think it matters at all. But there's a clock kind of running on this episode, so we're gonna start May 8th, 1994. It's like 11 p.m. or something. But we're gonna get like every so often we're gonna get like at 7:30 a.m. or it's 8:26 p.m. or whatever. And I'm not sure what that's supposed to like relay to the viewer, other than just time passing, which I can just tell because it's day
right
now.
I know time passes in almost every episode.
But I also maybe they're trying to like give us a little bit more tension. I don't think it works at all.
I basically didn't pay attention to it.
There you go. That's probably why it doesn't work, right? Because neither one of us cared about it that much.
Right.
But we're going to start with Mulder, who has passed out watching. That's got to be the Island of Dr. Moreau, right? Is that
something like that? I would assume it has to be something like that.
And I tried to. I didn't have a lot of time before we recorded. I tried to look it up, and there was like no trivia section that I could find. I don't know where all of the trivia for these episodes.
Yeah, I haven't seen Dr. Moreau. I have read it, but I haven't seen any of the adaptations of it.
Me either. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Because we're well read, but you know, we don't have time for the cinema.
I don't have any TVs in my house.
Sure. Yeah.
So this is the kind of guy I am. He's passed out. And he gets a phone call from Deep Throat, who tells him to tune into Channel 8, where the news is reporting on all of the stuff that happened in the cold open. Mulder very quickly and smartly grabs a blank VHS tape because he's got that.
I love that the instinct of that. It's like such a practiced motion. He doesn't even have to think about it.
Just slaps the tape in, hits record.
How many times has he just been like, oh, this seems interesting, let me just record just in case?
I would imagine the way they do this. Because we see him put the tape in, and then the camera goes back up and like shows the newscast where we see the captain kind of basically not telling the reporter anything and getting pulled off, and then it stops and it rewinds, and it's almost like he's rewinding live TV, which didn't exist in 1994. Like there was no TiVo, like there was no idea of the idea of streaming or anything, any of that stuff. So like, I wonder if they intentionally did this to make it look weird, because we transition from his house to the FBI, where he has brought the tape in and is showing Scully, and who does not care about this whatsoever. It's just like, why was this dude being chased? Why did this guy call you to tell you about it?
Why did he call you in the middle of the night to so you could look at this?
Yeah.
He's analyzing every single frame of this footage, and he's just not really noticing anything. I think the only thing they pull out of this scene here is that one of the cops on the scene is like doesn't have a badge, so they're like, who is this fella?
Yeah, there's just a guy there that doesn't look like he's marked up in any kind of way. So they print out a photo of him, because you can do that at the FBI. They have that technology. They head down to the dock to talk to the captain, who is great, understandably leery of the FBI just showing up unannounced and not requested. Mulder gives a pretty weak excuse of like, oh, the suspect matched the description of another set. And the guy's like,
we didn't release his description,
my friend. So they don't really get any information here. They decided to go.
Mulder doesn't even like come up with an excuse. He just doesn't say anything else.
Yeah. He just walks off. He's like, let's go look at the car. So they go to look at the car. Which is registered to a rental office, I believe, like a rental company. But Mulder very quickly puts together, via some pictures of the crime scene, that this is not the same car. They pulled the original car and replaced it. He calls in to his buddy Danny, who is going to be like a voice.
He's going to come up big throughout the episode.
Danny comes in clutch several times in this episode. But Danny's going to run the partial plates that they can get from the photograph of they pulled off of the news report, I think, is where they got this from.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have found the information on the owner of the real car, the car in the photo, not the one that they found at the impound or whatever. And this is Dr. Barabee? Is that how you say his name?
I thought it was Baroob.
I thought it was Baroob also, but I think they pronounced the B at the end. So, listeners, you guys know we're not good at this.
We're not particularly great at it. And they just run through it very quickly. But it's Berube. So I'm going to go...
Yeah, Dr. Baroobie. I can picture Mulder saying it now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't read that way to me. That reads as Dr. Baroob, but that's not how they say it. So whatever. Anyway, they go to this guy. He's working in his lab, and he's got... We hear the screech of monkeys. Yes. And he has all these caged monkeys around the room, and he's doing experiments on animals. We don't know what the hell he's doing, but he's doing some sort of experiments. He's extremely busy. He's stressed out. He didn't even know that his car was missing when they tell him. He says sometimes his housekeeper uses it. And yeah, he's just sort of shoos them away. He's like, am I, like, implicated in anything? No? All right, leave me the fuck alone. I have work to do. So Mulder's like, okay, I guess we should just go talk to the housekeeper and see if she knows what happened to the car. And this is where Scully puts her foot down for the first time in this episode. She's like, okay, what is happening?
Yes.
Deep Throat called you in the middle of the night. This fella, Deep Throat, we don't know anything about him, really, called you in the middle of the night, didn't tell you what to look for, doesn't tell you what he wants. He's just messing with you, Mulder. What are you doing? And she even, Mulder says, oh, what do you think he gets off on this? On toying with me like this? And she says, no, I think you get off on this, Mulder.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's kind of right to an extent. I think she is at least calling out Mulder from, like, the viewer's perspective, because it's so easy to, I mean, obviously he's, like, the main character. It's easy to kind of side with him. But the shit that he does is so ridiculous that
absolutely,
from any outside perspective whatsoever, it just seems like he loves getting carried away. And he does, I think. But then there's this other layer underneath it where, like, no, he truly is in pursuit of the truth. This isn't just a game to him.
And we've seen there's a certain amount of political pressure being put on Scully to have the X-Files department come in with, like, normal cases, right? Normal casework with reasonable investigation techniques and things like that. So her being this source of, hey, what are we doing? Like, this isn't even a case. Like, we don't have any jurisdiction here. Like, her being this voice makes a lot of sense right now.
Yeah.
Even though, as the viewer, I think it can be, and I've expressed some annoyance with this, with the way they write Scully sometimes, because it's not in this example, but when she's just like, when she sees a werewolf and then she's like, I don't know what I saw. Like, I don't know what that was. That seems really weird. Like, that kind of thing. And that's not quite what's happening here, but I think at this point in the series, like, the viewer could probably be annoyed by her just, like, constantly trying to pull him out of this chase for the truth. But she's being very, very reasonable. Like, Deep Throat has admitted that he's lied to Mulder before. They don't know who he is. They don't know what his motivations are. Mulder's putting an insane amount of trust in this dude for really no reason. And this kind of comes to a head in the next scene where Mulder gets approached by Deep Throat on his way home. And Deep Throat starts chastising Mulder for, like, not digging in enough and, like, oh, I thought you were going to be working all night to chase the truth. And Mulder says, is like, look, I've had it up to here. Like, you need to cut out the Obi-Wan Kenobi crap. Like, tell me what you need to tell me and, like, just get it out. Like, why are you being so mysterious? And it doesn't work. Deep Throat is just basically saying, like, hey, don't give up. You've never been closer. And then he doesn't even say closer to what. Like, he doesn't even say what he's what they're close to.
He just bails. Yeah. He can easily finish that sentence, but he walks away. He has to physically remove himself. It's not like he hangs up a phone. He's there.
Yeah. He just walks away in the middle of a conversation.
And he just walks away, which I do respect. But yeah, Mulder's still left with nothing other than the desire to now keep pushing further and further. Because I think Scully did get to him. Obviously, that's why he's going home, you know? Because he realizes there is some sense to what she's saying. He's not completely unreasonable. He does listen to her on occasion.
Well, and also, like, there's nothing to go on. Like, they ran down the only lead they had, which was the car. And that's mysterious and weird, but also, like, went nowhere, right? So as of right now, it doesn't, like, they don't have anything to investigate. Like, they can't go anywhere with it.
No.
This changes, of course, because in our next scene, we go back to the lab, start questioning, and a guy walks in the room. The credits, I just refer to this dude as the stranger in the entire episode.
Yeah, he's the stranger. I think that's a good, he's some working for a nefarious agency, seemingly, you know, we don't know who he is, but he doesn't say a lot, and he commits violence throughout the episode. And here he is to commit that violence upon Dr. Baroobie. He is here at the monkey lab. And what is he looking for? We don't know.
We don't know. He says the credits
are looking for Dr. Sicare.
Yeah, but we don't get that name yet. So
yeah, he's the dude from the cold open.
Yeah.
He's the dude from the cold open who was shot and jumped into the water, presumably putting two and two together. They're looking for him. Dr. Berube says, I don't know where he is. I haven't seen him. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why you're asking me. Whatever's going on here, the stranger fella kills the doctor.
Yeah. And we get the idea, like, it's pretty obvious that this dude is, like, governmented up, right? Like, he's not just
a random serial killer. He is.
Exactly.
He's working for somebody.
Yeah, yeah. We can tell he's not a random serial killer because he's not a little freak, which is what...
He's hardly freaky at all.
He's very, like, nondescript, almost. The credits refer to him as Crew Cut Man. Like, he doesn't even have a name. So, like, that's how non-freaky this dude is. We go back to the dock. We still haven't found the body that went into the water, so now the captain shuts down the search, and the camera pans over, and we see this dude is just, like, basically swimming directly underwater.
Yeah, he's been under there for 3 days, which is very strange.
We're going to learn later that he can breathe underwater. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that. Like, he just looked like he was, like, hanging out underwater, and then just, like, popped back up to take a breath or whatever.
I don't care if you can breathe underwater, man. 3 days? That's boring as hell. What are you doing down there? Just... Dude, treading water?
Your whole body is pruning. Your whole
sitting,
body.
Dude, oh, imagine how pruny this guy is. I know that they're talking about all the strange traits that these people have because their DNA has been spliced and all this shit. But, I mean, does that stop you from pruning up?
Aliens prune, dog. I can tell you this.
Aliens prune. We're going to see it in this episode, a pruned alien.
the most remarkable moment of television ever. Yeah, so we see him, and then we fade to black, and then we come back to... Oh, God, I lost my place in my notes.
So now we're at the crime scene where yes, Dr. Berube was killed. Yes. We're back at the lab. Mm-hmm.
Mulder and Scully
are looking around, and the place is destroyed. And they're like, yeah, no, this guy was so meticulous about everything yesterday. He was clearly, like, kept a very neat laboratory. This isn't right. And they ruled it as a suicide. He was thrown out the window, essentially, but they made it look like a hanging. But... they are very suspicious of this. And then I think Scully finds that the doctor was working on the human genome project, which is the mapping of human genes, which is kind of a big deal, like, in terms of, like, pushing science folder. But there's, you know, thousands of scientists working on this. It's not like it's some big covered up secret. It's just, you know, pushing science forward. So Scully is like, how is any of this piecing together, Mulder? None of this makes any sense.
And it doesn't, because, like, he doesn't have the answer to that. Instead, he pulls out a bottle of, like, a beaker of liquid that has purity control written on the bottom of it. And he hands it to her as, like, hey, can you figure out what this is? And she says, if this is monkey pee, you're on your own for the rest of this project. they split up. So Mulder goes to Berube's house and breaks in because there's nobody there.
Nobody answers the door, so, well, just better break in a window.
Which tells you, I think, how... I guess how, like, devoted he is at this point. Like, he is.
Well,
like,
yeah. I mean,
this is not normal investigation techniques.
No,
at this point.
No. He's bent the rules before, certainly, and he's probably broken into a house earlier in the season too. I don't remember, but I think Deep Throat's really gotten to him on this. That
he's certainly broken
into
a military base. I know for a fact he did that.
Absolutely, he did that. Yeah. And he had to get his chaperone to pick him up. But yeah, it's a. He's desperate, or not desperate, but he's really driven on this.
Yeah. Scully, meanwhile, goes to a lab in Georgetown to basically look at it, and it's very unusual bacteria that they're gonna have to do some more tests, but, like, it doesn't look like just plain ass bacteria as we know and love. Meanwhile, Mulder is going through Berube's desk. He finds a telephone bill. This is very old school. Like, oh, let me pull out, like, my saved telephone bill and look and look through this piece of paper and look at all of the phone numbers that I called. He calls our buddy Danny, saying, like, hey, I need you to get a trace on this phone number.
There's one number in there that's been called far more than any of the others. Turns out it was just his girlfriend.
Yep, it's probably the local pizza place.
There was a lot of pizza.
There was a local delivery place when I was a bachelor that I would eat at so often that I would just call, and they would recognize my number and be like just answer the phone, like, do you want the regular? And I'd be like, yep. And they would just hang up. Like, it was that.
That's the kind of relationship that you really can't take for granted.
It was nice, but also kind of sad. it was just that it would happen that often. Like, I'm eating that many calzones in my life that I've got, I got these people just knowing who I am. That's kind of sad.
It's all about your perspective.
I guess so.
You had a calzone guy. What's wrong with that?
I do like a calzone, Chris. I'm not going to lie. While this is happening, a van pulls up behind the street, on the street, outside of the window, and Crew Cut Man uses a device, like a remote listening device, basically picking up the vibrations on the glass, the sound vibrations on the glass, to be able to hear what's going on. And that's when the phone rings, and I almost called him David. Mulder assumes that it's Danny calling back, but instead it's Sicara. It's the guy that went into the water, and he's panicking because he's injured. He's been out in the water for 3 days.
He's pruned up to hell. He's got
one large prune. He is bleeding green goop. He's leaving green goop everywhere, like it's fucking St. Patty's Day in Boston. And he needs help. And Mulder just kind of pretends to be Berube for a while and is trying to get like the location of this man, and it's not working.
Because then he collapses, and then a nearby passerby grabs the phone and he's like, I'm gonna call an ambulance, and just hangs up on Mulder.
The phone rings again. This time the van takes off, having heard this. The phone rings again, and Danny has a contact for the phone number. It's a Zeus Storage.
On 1616 Pandora Street. Now, I don't really know my Greek mythology, but I know that Pandora had a box that was not supposed to be opened.
No.
I don't know how Zeus related to that, but he was always up to no good.
Well, he probably had sex with Pandora and made
the
box.
He was probably in the box with his cock out.
Please bleep that. Oh, no, we've already broke the E for everyone. Like, we've been saying motherfucker and talking about all kinds of shit.
Season 2 will be different.
Season 2, we're going to go for PG-13. Like, that'll be we'll have one fuck per episode.
That's right.
But I had plenty of shit.
Shit to go around,
and maybe some boob shots. Like, that'll be PG-13. Like, that'll be an 80s PG-13, not a 90s.
Definitely.
We get this ambulance scene with Sicar, and I thought he was
intentionally leaking a gas attack from his wounds, but I think he's just leaking nastiness.
He's just leaking some nastiness. The attending emergency response guys on the phone with somebody, which feels kind of weird. As they're kind of talking through trying to figure out how to fix this dude, they decide to do a needle decompression. I guess they think this dude is swole up. He's got a bunch of gas on the inside or something. I'm not sure why.
He's pruned up like crazy.
And they're so pruny. They're like, we got to get some of this moisture out of this guy's body. And when they do that, it releases this gas into the air, which basically knocks everybody, including the driver, out.
They come to a relatively safe stop.
Thankfully, the driver is like coughing and everything, so like he's able to pull over. Like, they don't wreck or anything. But yeah, this dude gets out and has to run away, essentially, because I thought he killed these people. We're gonna find out later. I guess you just get knocked out depending on your the amount of exposure that you get. So,
yeah, he's a human alien hybrid, but he's no murderer.
Exactly. Yeah. Scully calls Mulder, and it's time for a little catch up. So Mulder explains to her, really nothing. He doesn't tell her anything.
Hey, the guy in the water, I just got a call from him. Pretty sure he's still alive.
But Scully has found out a lot about this bacteria. It contains viruses. It contains plant cells. She theorizes that Berube was using this for some sort of gene therapy. He was cloning this, which is why he was running this with the monkeys. And you could tell she's like actually shaken. And she tells, as she tells Mulder, like, if this is legit, like, we got more tests to do, but like, this bacteria hasn't existed on our planet for millions of years, like before humans.
She literally has to like stop. She's like, I can't emphasize how strange this is.
She is freaked out.
Yeah. Because this is suddenly seems very up Mulder's alley all of a sudden. And as a scientist, as a doctor, this is the type of thing that's going to blow her mind.
Meanwhile, Mulder arrives at the Zeus Storage, goes inside. He's got the keys to the place from Berube's desk. This is a very spooky shot, real dark, but with great lighting that we're kind of used to seeing in season one. He goes into this storage unit and finds tanks full of people. Just kind of floating in some strange green solution, computers on the wall. This is very creepy and very cool.
Very strange. From at first, you know, we get this faraway shot of the room. I almost thought that they were straight up aliens, but as we get in closer, Mulder takes a closer look. You can see these are all people, which is even stranger, honestly.
Super weird. Yeah.
And one of them starts to like move. So it's not like these are dead bodies. These people are alive.
And one of the tanks is notably empty. Presumably mm-hmm. Sakaar's tank is notably empty.
He got loose.
We go back over to the Georgetown lab where the doctor that's been helping Scully wakes Scully up off the couch. Again, I think they're really trying to tell us like this is all happening sequentially. Like there's no breaks, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. They're working overnight. I don't think they quite pull it off. Like I didn't really feel any kind of tension that they were trying to build up from that. But and then this technician explains to Scully, who knows this, and the audience who probably don't know this, that all DNA on Earth is built on four nucleotides, like two pairs mm-hmm. basically, or four pairs. And this bacteria that they found not only has weird gaps in the DNA sequencing, which they didn't expect, but it has two extra nucleotides.
Yeah, it has a fifth and a sixth that they have never seen before.
Which is, by definition, extraterrestrial, because it's never been found on this world.
Her words. Yes. Her words. Does not exist in nature.
Does not exist in nature. So super freaky. And now, like, this is hardcore scientific evidence that Scully can take and go like, oh shit, like mm-hmm. this is, I have to believe this. Like this is a doctor telling me this, right?
And like, it's not like Scully has ever not wanted to believe. Not like she has ever, you know, wanted to defraud Mulder. There has just never been this kind of hard evidence to support the things that he says. And she cares about the evidence. She doesn't care about, she doesn't have a bias one way or the other. She just cares about having the evidence to actually support the things that Mulder says. And right now she does.
Exactly. Yeah. Mulder leaves the storage building, sees this van pull up, sees people get out of this van, assumes rightfully probably that these guys are coming for him. So he turns and walks the other way and another man starts pursuing him. So he cuts down an alley and basically leaps over a 10-foot fence. Mulder with the fucking jumps with the just mad air on this. Ooh, I mean, he just like,
I know he's a basketball fan, so he's probably out there hooping a little bit. And, Mulder, the Lakers need you, man.
He parkours over this bad boy. I mean, the Lakers probably don't need him. Utah Jazz probably need him.
That's
the
one. That's the only team I can ever pull up for that joke.
It's just the Lakers.
The Jazz. Yeah. I don't know. I've read it somewhere once. Just like, oh, what are you doing out here, man? The Lakers need you. That's just the one thing I go to every time.
I love that he just vaults over this fence. It's very funny.
No sweat, dude.
No problem whatsoever.
And that's how he loses them. The show tries to make it seem like in a little while they weren't actually there for Mulder. They were there to get rid of the evidence. But no, once they saw his ups, they were like,
we're not going to catch this dude. Let's go to
plan B.
Priority two on the list is not him. Of course, he has to leave like his car behind, and his phone was in the car. So when he gets home, he gets a panicked phone call from Scully, who's been trying to reach him. And he basically just says, you have to get back over here, like super fast. The next morning, they arrive back at the zoo storage. But before they go in, Scully stops him and apologizes for not believing, and says, like, you know, she's just kind of confused because there's this evidence and she doesn't know what to believe. And he says, whatever you do believe, when you walk into this room, nothing sacred will hold. And I feel like that's a four word sentence that's really, really powerful, of just like, you're about to see some stuff that's going to shake your foundational beliefs and reality and what you think is real and not real. And what
they're going to go in and they're going to look, and, you know, there's going to be people in the tubes, and he's going to say, look, Scully, no prunes.
No prunes.
Your skin is totally prune free.
We've invented prune free skin.
Perfected it.
We finally here. We can stay in the jacuzzi as long as you want to, Scully. We can stay in there for hours if you want to.
She's just looking at it.
You never have to leave.
Open.
Everybody is just amazed. Most of all, the jacuzzi makers. They're so happy.
They're so happy. And it's interesting. She says before they go in that, you know, she knows she should have trusted his instincts. And he goes, why? Nobody else does. And I don't know if that's self-deprecating or he's just trying to let her off the hook a little bit, but it was a funny line. But yeah, then they go in.
And of course, the room is empty.
Second that they get there, you already know.
Because
they gave up the pursuit of Mulder so easily that you just know something's up.
And to further the surprise, Deep Throat shows up. And now all of a sudden he's willing to give them tons of information. He says the tapes were destroyed. He doesn't know how, but he says that there's so many levels of the intelligence organizations that, you know, go all the way to the top, which is a classic, like, I mean, where's the top?
There's at the top.
Groups within groups within groups that all have, you know, maybe conflicting or overlapping motives. So he doesn't know exactly who did this, but he knows that Brubaker was experimenting and creating human alien hybrids. He was using tissue, actual alien tissue that they've had since 1947. Mulder pipes in about, you know, Roswell, and he's like, that was just a smokescreen. Like, that was just to hide the real thing. Everybody was kind of happy to let this go on until it started working, until Brubaker experimented on his friend Sakaar and basically cured this dude's cancer, gave him super strength and the ability to breathe underwater. And they were like, no, we can't have alien human hybrids running around like that. There's no way that's allowed. So they're shutting the whole organization down, like, or not organization, but they're shutting the whole experimental project down.
Mm-hmm. And they want to kill this dude. They want to kill this hybrid who's out on the loose. And this is where Scully starts pushing back again. Like, she's like, all right, Deep Throat, why did you give us so little before? And now all of a sudden you just want to open up about all this. Because frankly, this cleanup crew, they were too good, too fast, too proficient. And they now need to step up their game, Mulder and Scully, to find Dr. Sakaar before this cleanup crew finds him.
And this is almost I think this is a very clever answer, because it shoves the onus back on Mulder and Scully to have to do something. But he doesn't actually, like, answer the why. Like, okay, no. You're telling us this, and you're telling us this because, you know, these people are moving very fast and you want to collect the evidence. Why do you want to collect? What does this serve you? You obviously know all of the details already. So, like, why is it important for you that this gets out? And especially that Mulder and Scully specifically are the ones that do it. Like, he doesn't answer any of those questions. And he just leaves them.
So Mulder's he just leaves them. So the huge evidence that Mulder found, gone. There's no trace of it. So all that support, all that evidence is gone. Scully goes back over to the lab to talk to the doctor who's been helping her with all this DNA stuff. She finds out that this doctor was killed in an accident last night. Her and her whole family are gone.
Incredible.
Suddenly, every shred of evidence that they had on either end is gone, and people are getting killed for it.
Mulder, meanwhile, goes back to Berube's house, hears some weird noises, goes up into the attic, and is attacked by Sakaar before he can get, like, his, like, I'll protect you kind of speech going. Someone shoots Sakaar. We look over, and it's Crew Cut Guy wearing a gas mask. And basically, this dude gets shot in the neck, and Mulder... when they get shot, he releases this gas, and so Mulder starts, like, inhaling this gas, and Mulder starts going down. When he comes to, his eyes are all, like, fucked up and swollen. He looks really, really rough. He's got his hands are duct taped behind his back. His cell phone is constantly ringing. Crew Cut Man, like, does some little villain speech kind of bullshit. Doesn't really go anywhere.
Talking about, oh, you're popular, your phone's ringing off the hook. And Mulder's like, well, why don't you answer it then? This is probably one of the worst positions and shapes we've seen Mulder in quite some time. And he's still got to have his little quips. Like, he still can't drop the attitude a little bit, which you got to love him for.
Got to love Mulder for that. Even, like, when he was getting, like, brainwashed at the Air Force base way back when. I feel like he was still, like, serving up some looks during that whole process.
Yeah, you can't take the dog out of Mulder.
Scully, obviously panicking because she can't find Mulder, goes to his apartment and is surprised when Deep Throat shows up and says, you know, hey, I know for a fact that they're not going to kill Mulder. What we should do, I can get you into the facility that holds the original alien tissue, and we can use that to trade for Mulder. But they can't kill him because he knows too much, which, again, also feels like very TV writing to me.
There's something about, they say he's too high profile, maybe killing somebody who's that high up in the FBI, who's got that much of a reputation, that would bring too much unwanted attention if he suddenly goes missing while he was looking into this. So it's TV writing, certainly, because the easiest thing to do here is just to kill Mulder and be done with it. But that wouldn't be very fun for us.
No. Instead, Scully has to go to a fort. I forgot to write down the name of the fort. Fort Chris.
Fort something.
Fort Chris.
Fort something. It's Fortress.
She has been given access to this fort, so she's...
It's a high containment center at said fort in Maryland, I guess.
And she goes in, she presents her badge, she's allowed to go through. She goes up the elevator. This is all very, like, am I about to get busted kind of tension, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's the mm-hmm. way this is filmed. It takes a while. Like, this is, like, a good, like, 5 to 7 minutes of her, like, walking through this facility.
Because she doesn't trust Deep Throat, and she doesn't know what kind of power he has. He says, oh, I can get you in, but how far does his influence extend? And apparently, it extends all the way up to a cryogenic tube with something very special inside.
Oh, Chris. She's able to get through. She gets prompted for a password, and she pulls out the purity control at the last minute, and so she's allowed access. She goes to this chamber. She pulls out the tube. She opens up the top, and she pulls out what I thought was just going to be a tissue sample. I thought this was going to be...
That's what they said. They have, essentially, a tissue sample from an alien. That's exactly what I expected. I'm thinking it's just going to be some nebulous shape in a jar.
Did not expect the smallest, freakiest guy I have ever seen in my entire life. I can't imagine watching this in 1994 and her pulling out this weird little freakazoid.
My notes had been pretty straightforward in this episode, and I hadn't been making, like, sometimes, you know, you and I would both kind of like write in jokes and stuff we think is funny as we're going through it. I hadn't really written any of it here, and then suddenly my notes are interrupted, and I just said, oh my god, it's a tiny fucking baby alien. Because he's just a tiny fucking baby alien in a jar.
My notes literally have "what the fuck" written in them. Like, it is a tiny baby alien. It looks like it's got, like, kind of pinned into this little chamber. Mm-hmm. It's got a little face. It's very cute.
Reminds me very lovingly, very fondly of the Mexico alien.
Yes, yeah. If you took all of the clothes off of Baby Yoda, off of Grogu,
this is what he would look like.
This is what he looks like underneath.
That little freak.
Yeah, he looks like a little tiny little weirdo.
Not so cute now, huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Grogu.
Jesus Christ, Star Wars. What are you doing? Fuck, making more little trash monkeys. Jesus Christ. But
Mulder is never going to see this.
No.
In this episode, certainly. That's the most fascinating thing. Scully is the one who sees the tiny baby alien. And she just looks at it, just absolutely dumbfounded. I don't know if we, as the audience, are supposed to have some sort of, like, suspension of disbelief or doubt, rather. I don't know if we're supposed to doubt that this could be something else. Is this a strange-looking chicken or something? Because that never crossed my mind for
not a single second. Yeah, not a single second.
I thought, that is an extraterrestrial alien.
That is a baby
that
alien.
That is an alien from outer space.
Yes, that is an alien.
Keeping it, I would just want to say they're keeping it, like, in a cryogenic tube. She's on the cryology floor of this lab or whatever she's in. So this has been frozen in here. And, you know, it's got the smoke comes out when she opens the tube and all that. Later on, Scully is just holding it in a cardboard box.
Yes.
And then further down the line later on, it's just being, like, stored in a filing cabinet.
Yeah, this is going to be, like, thawed out, essentially.
Like, what is that? It's going to smell, dude. It's going to smell.
It's going to reek. It's got to reek after all of that time. We cut to Scully on the bridge, mm-hmm. in her car. Deep Throat pulls up behind her. She gets out. She goes over to talk to him. He demands that she give him the sample, the cute little freakazoid baby. And she says, no, like, if you've got a deal lined up, I'm going to be the one doing it. I don't trust you to do this. And he kind of starts ranting. He talks about how dangerous these people are. He tells an anecdote about 8 children in the South being given alien DNA as part of a pretend inoculation. That's how far these people will go. Like, that's how ruthless they are.
Yeah, they'll experiment on kids. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, so, like, the fact that they're willing to do this, like, it has to be me. Like, it can't be you. And she eventually relents. As this is happening, we see a van pull up. She gives him the box. He gets out and approaches the van. She's watching everything from her car as the crew cut man gets out of the van, gets the box, and immediately shoots Deep Throat in the chest.
Yeah. It's also notably, crew cut man makes, like, direct eye contact with Scully. I would say my cat's name by accident. With Scully as he drives by. Like, he's like, I am aware that you're here and I don't care. I'm still going to go do this.
Exactly. Yeah. Shoots Deep Throat. The back doors of the van open. Mulder is just unceremoniously tossed to the pavement. Scully runs over, checks on Mulder. He seems fine. Runs over to Deep Throat, who says, who manages to get out, trust no one, before he dies. And ooh, that's
iconic words.
Iconic words. We skip ahead 18 days later.
There's part of me that always thinks like, oh, we should have just let the episode end right there.
Yeah, because I almost thought they would, because they were pulling out and they were like they did like the long crane shot to pull out, and I just thought like, oh, they're gonna leave us like, we don't know if, because the last time we saw Mulder, his eyes were all fucked up, like we don't know if he's dead, like we don't know if the alien gas like killed him or what. But no, we're gonna skip ahead to 18 days later. Scully, who is having trouble sleeping anyway, gets a phone call in the middle of the night from Mulder, who just left Skinner's office. And the good news is his eyes are all fixed. He looks normal. But he's got some severe bad news that Skinner told him that they are shutting down the X-Files. It came down all the way from the executive branch. So the president got involved and said, like, fuck these guys. But Mulder says he can't give up, not as long as the truth is out there.
So I guess that's also a pretty good like stinger for the end of your season is, the X-Files have been shut down. So I guess if you get canceled, that's also a good ending.
Dean's not going to hunt anymore, Chris.
Yeah. Scully pushes just, well, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I'm not giving up, you know? So we know that this isn't the end for Mulder. The show is still called The X-Files, and it's on TV for a very long time. So I think that they'll probably be back.
More than likely be back next season. I have it on good authority.
Haven't looked ahead yet.
Yeah. Happen to have looked at IMDb and saw that there was 247 episodes. So we've got a little ways to go.
Okay. We get one last shot before the end of the smoking man coming into that, you know, storage center in the Pentagon. We saw this earlier in the season. I think at the beginning of the end of the first episode.
Yep.
And he's bringing in the baby alien that's no longer in the cryogenic tube. It's just in like a mason jar. And he's
it's
just,
not a mason jar. It'd be very funny if it was a mason jar. But
a mason jar, dude.
It's just
puts it in there with his other jams.
He's got some other alien babies in there. This is not the only alien baby. So they've definitely got more than one. I like this as an ending because, as you mentioned, like this was the ending of the first episode. So like there's a, and it's the exact same. It looks like it's the exact same scene where he puts this up and then walks to the front and then, you know, closes the door and it's on the Pentagon or whatever, on this room.
And
in the
it feels
Pentagon.
Like this is, it turns what was a huge deal. This, oh my God, we have what is essentially an alien corpse. It turns this sensation into just another thing. Just file it away with all the other stuff we have. It's like, no, that wasn't a big deal. There's way more out there that you don't even know about. This is only the tip of the iceberg. And Deep Throat used that term earlier when talking to Scully. This is the tip of the iceberg. You and Mulder need to bring this to light. That's why you both have to, you know, live and keep searching.
Yeah.
I just can't get over the fact that this thing is not like frozen up anymore. Is it going to deteriorate?
It's in some juice.
It's in a mason jar.
It's in some juice in a mason jar. Like, I don't know. Like, I made, me and Autumn made limoncello one time, and that shit, like, lasted 2 years or something. So, like.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You know, that wasn't even using, like, alien lemons or anything. It was just normal, everyday lemons. So,
and
like,
we already know that aliens don't prune, so.
I know. God, that limoncello.
So maybe they don't decay.
Chris, that limoncello was nasty. we finally opened it up, and we're like, oh, yeah, we've been working on this for so long. And, like, it was this grossest shit I've ever drank in my entire life. It was so bad. I'm fascinated by this episode. I really am because, like everything leading up to the very end, doing the thing where they remove Mulder from the climax, I think is something really interesting. Having the climax be, like this kind of tension filled moment, of just Scully, going through.
That's really good. I'm glad you brought that up because it's not even just the ending, but so many of the pivotal things in this are seen only by Scully.
Yeah.
Especially this Deep Throat assassination. She's the one doing the handoff. She's the one who is doing all the work, essentially. And she's the one who gets the trust no one, you know, kind of final message at the end. And does that ignite a fire under her? We don't know.
And I'm, you know, I bet at the time, people want their TV shows to change, but also not change, right? Like, they want their, I think people want character development, but they still want the same structure of the show every week, right? That's why they tune in. So how this is going to fundamentally change Scully and Mulder's relationship, like, number one, they're not partners anymore if there's no X-Files.
Right.
Number two, she has seen unquestionable belief of alien life, and he hasn't. He has not seen that. And we know that Mulder, despite his open-mindedness, he doesn't actually like seize onto these things as real until he gets proof of them. Like one of the things that he likes to do is prove the Lonely Island kids. I can't remember their actual names at all.
The Lone Gunman.
The Lone Gunman group.
No, it's Andy Samberg.
It's Andy Samberg. Yep. Yeah. He likes to prove them wrong. He likes to prove their theories wrong. Like he does that for sport. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic if they've turned that dynamic on its head. So now that Scully is the true believer, and now Mulder has to be like, wait, Scully, we don't have any evidence to support this, right? Like, it's going to be the opposite.
Yeah, and she's going to be like, Mulder, I held a baby alien in my hands.
And I don't really trust the show, especially in an early 90s show, to have that much of a difference in its basic premise from one season to the next. But, like, I can... And from a writing standpoint, I really want them to do that. Like, I think that would be interesting to go into season two with that kind of new dynamic. So, yeah, but it's just, and also like the death of Deep Throat, right? Like their one contact that seemed like they could get information from that they wouldn't normally have access to, like, is now gone. Like, how does
and
that
also
work?
The fact that even though Mulder was still trusting him and we had that episode where Deep Throat's like, yeah, I lied to you. Yeah, I used you, but there was a reason I was doing it. And as a viewer, you still have your doubts about this guy. But then the fact that he gets killed, you're like, well, does that kind of erase all doubts? Does that make you question like what his real motives were? Was he actually really, you know, a good guy all along or whatever? And why did somebody want him dead? Why did somebody want him out of the picture if he's already working on, you know, with the higher ups and everything? What does that mean for the future of Mulder and Scully? Are they going to come after them next? It raises a lot of questions. Will Deep Throat be back? I genuinely have no idea. I assume he's dead.
No idea. Yeah, no clue. Pretty confident now having finished it that I don't think I've ever seen a single episode of the series from season one. Like I just feel like
that's
I somehow
fantastic.
Just absolutely skipped it somehow. So
the first episode that I saw did not show up in season one, which I was surprised by because I definitely thought it did. But I guess that makes sense because I saw it on TV and I would have been three in 1993. I was definitely young, but I don't think I'd remember shit from back then.
And again, just being... I mean, just in that era, like it was really, really difficult to see serialized TV if you weren't tuning in every single, like if you didn't get the TV guide section out of your newspaper or go buy a TV guide, like you had no idea when shit was happening. Super interesting. Like it just doesn't work that way anymore.
Yeah. I do vaguely remember, you know, my dad and sister watching the commercials for it and my sister telling me, oh, there's going to be dinosaurs in this next episode coming up, which was not true. There is a dinosaur-like creature in whatever it is. And turns out fucking X-Files is very scary when you're five or six. So,
yes.
So I'm looking forward to getting to that episode, whatever season it's in. I hope it's season two because I really want to rewatch that one. But
I'm excited for the second season. I think mostly to see if they focus on this Myth Arc stuff, to see if we get into what I remember mostly as the Myth Arc stuff, which was like his little sister and all of the weird like alien possession stuff and all of that business. But at the same time, it's 20 something episodes. So what I really want are like some really creative Monster of the Week episodes at the same time, like just some whack ass stuff happening. Like I don't care what it is, like a werepanther. Like I want them to have to deal with a werepanther.
I want that. I think, is it right around this time that Gillian Anderson is pregnant? Because I do know that sort of factors into some of the stuff that happens. And I think season two. I think it's season two. They just, you know, they got to work around it. So I'm not sure. But we're going to see some crazy stuff, I think, in the next couple seasons.
I'm excited. Next week, listeners, we'll have a guest for our season one feedback episode. We're going to be reading your feedback. If you're too late to get your thoughts and feelings out to us on this feedback episode, go ahead and send it in monsterthetheweekpodcast@gmail.com. I'll save it for the next one. We'll do it for season two. We'll definitely get you read on the air. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for the people leaving reviews, commenting on Spotify, doing all of that stuff and sharing this with your friends. It means a lot to us that you guys are supporting the show in such a direct fashion. Very, very much appreciate it. Season one down. Like seven seasons and a movie to go, two movies to go.
Eight or nine, but yeah.
Yeah, sure. so excited to finish the series. It's going to happen so fast. Chris, any last thoughts before we get out of here?
I'm excited to start season two. We'll see you guys next week. We'll discuss, you know, our kind of final thoughts on season one and then, you know, read the feedback and all that stuff. So we'll be brewing on some things until then.
Thank you again for everybody for listening. And remember, stay spooky. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're having a conversation.
Now, well, we're just saying the same two phrases over top of
still,
each other.
Still, at least we're responding to each other. Jesus. Why is it every fucking time?
Every single time.
I don't use this computer for anything other than this.
It's so ridiculous.
Ay, ay, ay,
he says.
Like, I understand, like, because I move my little router back and forth, that's obviously an issue. But just the computer itself, like, I don't understand the drastic wound that Discord suffers each week that I need to constantly just try to check it every day just to make sure it's up to date. You know, there aren't that big stretches of time between us recording.
Usually not, no. I mean, it's typically once a week. I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes we'll go like 2 weeks, but it's rare. So
yeah. Wow. Anyway, always off.
Hey, Chris.
To a good start with this shit.
How you doing, Chris?
Things are good? I'm doing okay. I'm a little sleepy. I'm a sleepy boy today, but I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I watched Dune 2 yesterday.
Oh, how was that?
That movie is 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
Length?
Which means that it takes about 3.5 hours for us to watch.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Definitely. Yeah.
Between like, okay, we're going to get like, you know, we got to top off some drinks. We got to have a snack in the mm-hmm. middle. We got to take her to the bathroom. Like it's very seldom we get through a movie without pausing it. That's just a very long movie. By the end, I think Autumn was just exhausted with it. Like it was so incredibly good. Like I could drink that fucking movie up. Just like no problem. But also by the end, you're just like, God, this has been, I've been doing this for a while.
I've been doing this for most of the day.
I've been doing it for a while. You get it?
You've been doing it for too long.
Doing it.
Oh, you know, kind of unrelated, but I was thinking yesterday, we watched a Red Sox game and then we watched the Bruins hockey game because they're in the playoffs now. And I was thinking, does Louisiana have a professional sports team that I'm forgetting about?
The Saints.
Okay. All right. I felt like I was like having a brain fart. I was like, I know there's something, but there's no baseball team, right?
I don't think there's ever been a baseball team. We had a basketball team called the New Orleans Jazz, and then they got sent off to like Utah. So now Utah,
that's right.
the Utah state jazz, famously known for its jazz.
Yeah. doesn't seem right.
As the Utah Jazz
team. Y'all got
to
keep the name too?
Yeah, I guess they kept the name. I don't understand how basketball teams work at all, like if you can just buy and sell them that way. But no, the Saints is the only professional team. Now for college, like...
I know college sports are a big deal. So
LSU is like the big thing because like even like gymnastics, women's basketball, dance teams, football, like it's all over the place. Like the LSU football, the LSU athletic program is pretty hype. So
yeah, that's something big. And I wouldn't expect. I mean, a lot of states don't have hockey teams. Hockey's much, I think, smaller than a lot of the other professional sports.
Fun enough, we never had a professional hockey team. We had an amateur hockey team. And they were called the Ice Gators.
Whoa.
Right? Huh? The Ice Gators. I remember like being around in the early aughts because I think I went to a game or I got tickets and didn't go to the game. I don't remember what it was, but I just remember being fascinated by the name of just like Ice Gators. What a good little
that's
pun.
Fun. That's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, it's very yeah, it's
not
very
enough
fun.
Of these teams have puns.
No, not at all. But no, I don't go to a lot of like we wanted to. So our trip to Italy is coming up in a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. And so we're big soccer fans. So we're like, I bet there's like an Italian football thing that we could get into.
Yeah,
And there's not. So we looked up the thing in Rome, and like the day after we leave, like there's going to be two teams playing.
There's a big battle in the Coliseum.
Yeah. But any of the days that we're there, there's nothing happening at all, which is really frustrating.
That's annoying. I mean, obviously, I don't go to a lot of sporting events. Went to a baseball game last year. Well, I'll probably go again this year because that was a lot of fun. Fenway is really easy. It's just like because it's not that far from me, and it's just like, yep, whatever. Just go here, have a couple drinks, and go home. No big deal.
That's literally the only like baseball stadium I've ever been to is Fenway.
Oh wow, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny. It still looks the same probably from when you were there. It has not changed in my entire life.
Chris, I was so drunk. I have no idea.
Yeah, fair enough.
I was so
fair
drunk.
We were sitting up like by left field, so whatever. Now granted, I was also pretty drunk. So I was just vibing. I mean, they got smoked that day, but it was a beautiful day and I was just having fun. Meanwhile, Jess is out here from from left field is just calling balls and strikes. And she's just like, oh, nope, that was left. That was right. That this is bullshit. I'm like, how are you seeing any? And she was accurate, too. Mm-hmm. She does it when we're watching on TV. She sees stuff without even, like, before I've looked at the strike zone or whatever. I don't understand how she sees what she sees, but I'm not fucking seeing it. I'm just here to hang out, basically.
My TikTok is full of compilation videos of umpires. I don't think I've said that word aloud too many times in my life.
I bet it doesn't come up a lot.
It's full of compilation videos of umpires, which seems such a weird word, getting the calls wrong. So maybe she has a future in getting, maybe she needs to get behind the diamond, the mat, base.
She should give, yeah.
Whatever they call it. I don't know.
It's the diamond for sure. Last night it was weird. There's so many new rules in baseball that they have done to like speed up the game. And I don't know what happened at the end of the game last night, but this guy on the Pirates, like, he took his, you can like take a break when you're up at bat, like step back for 5 seconds or whatever, and then you can come back in. And when he stepped back in, he like had something in his eye, so he like was rubbing his eye. And they essentially just like said that that took him too long to get ready or something, so they gave him an automatic strike, and it was, you know, strike three, so he was out. And this is, you know, the final inning of the game, so it was like a crucial out for this team. I mean, the Red Sox won, so as a viewer, I was like, okay, sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. It seemed very unfair.
Some new rule fuckery happening there. I can't believe I'm talking about sports. I don't like this.
We're talking about sports. I like the new rule in baseball where if the catcher drops the ball, everybody has to recite a Taylor Swift lyric. That's a fun one for me.
That is one of the rules. It's crazy. And you would think that it would just be football because of all the hubbub there, but no, it's actually baseball that has had the biggest impact from Taylor Swift.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Baseball Association, the National Baseball Association, aka the NBA, it was very jealous of the attention that the NFL was getting from Taylor Swift, so that's why they started instituting some of these rules. So
you know, they need their own celebrities. What celebrities are going to baseball games? Nobody.
Baseball is going to get Chapel Roan. That's going to be a much. Okay. It's going to be. Okay. We're going to turn the MLB into lesbian ball. That's going to be. Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani, the you know, superstar from the Dodgers. They had his wife. I thought that she must have been, because she's also Japanese, so I assume she's a celebrity or something, because they were saying how they spent more, like the cameras of that game that she was there, spent more time on her than like they did the entire year on Taylor Swift. So I'm like, oh, well, she's probably famous in Japan. No, she's just like a regular lady who just happens to be married to a famous baseball player. But the cameras were just on her the whole time. That's how little is going on in baseball.
If I have to guess, she's probably exceptionally beautiful, right? Like that's the way these things work.
I didn't even see it. I just read the thing.
Oh, you don't see beauty, Chris? Is that what you're
saying? I don't see beauty like that. I just don't judge people on that level, you know? My attraction to people is based on not what they look like, but how much of a hater they are.
Yeah, well, that does make sense. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that the hater is really what shines through as true beauty.
What do you think if you were on a blind date or just on a first date, and this was actually legit true, and you were trying to determine someone's hatertude, right?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of questions? Like, what kind of probing questions do you think you would ask about?
I feel like you have to create scenarios where you can be a hater.
Bits is what you're talking
like
about.
Like hater bits, but just kind of like minor stuff. Like somebody comes in and they're too loud and you go, get a load of this guy. You know, just like get it rolling a little bit.
You just kind of point over to somebody that's like using their hands instead of their fork, and like you're just kind of cutting
and
eyes.
Maybe like raise an eyebrow, and if they do it too, then you know, like, okay, you know, they got that dog in them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I used to do this with Steve. We would go out, you know, on our friend dates. Back before I had a girlfriend, we would just go out and just, you know, sit and have lunch together, and then whoever sat near us, I'm like, well, this is the target of all of my attention. I'm not going to talk to you the entire time. I'm just going to listen to them and then look over you every few minutes and just kind of raise my eyebrows, because he's a hater too. He's probably more of a hater than I am. So
I dipped back into an older rap album that I like a whole lot, and there's a song on it, and I think I've told you this before, but I'm going to say it again because I love it so much. The opening line is, I come in the room with a hater skin jacket and a matching hater skin hat.
Dude,
and
need I just those. Need
man,
those.
The matching hater skin hat is just, it does something to my brain. Like, it just tickles
my brain so much. Rolling up in the hater skin cowboy boots.
Oh, come on, dude. You got them haters on? You got them ice haters on? What?
Need those, dog. Need those.
But yes, to sum up this conversation, Dune 2 is fantastic movie, and you should probably watch it if you if you like Dune 2.
We're talking about Dune, that's right.
I can't wait for them to do the third movie. Have you read the books? Are you Dune enabled?
I was never into Dune. Because I don't like sand. So
sure, you know. And this is a lot of sand, and
I just thought this book's about sand. You know,
it is. There's a lot of sand in it. I can see how you would think that.
It was always in my sphere of like I got to read Dune eventually, sure. And I just never did. And now there's massively successful movies.
Yeah, they and the third one. Like if they do the third one, it's going to get so fucking weird. And
Dune guy's name is Paul. It's Paul, right?
Yes, Paul.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, because like his girlfriend's name is Chani, right?
Okay. Well, yeah, it's like you know you have Luke, very normal, but then he's got Obi-Wan. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Until I watched the second one, where they do some like weird stuff, without getting into the like. I don't know. There's an unborn fetus that like talks. Nice. I didn't really understand how they were.
We kind of got one of those in this episode of X-Files.
I know, right? I didn't really understand how they were going to pull that off, and then they did. And so, like now, the stuff that happens in the third movie, where major characters are cloned over thousands of years, and somebody turns into a worm, like things like that go on. Like I just can't wait. Like please, Denise, like just please give me the worm. I just want the worm so bad.
Need that worm real bad, big time. I do know about the worm. I'm familiar with the Dune worm. I mean, beyond there being a worm, I'm not familiar. But I don't know. Maybe I do want to watch the movies at some point. I think the first one's on Netflix. I don't know if the second one is.
They're both on streaming now. I don't know where the second one is on streaming. I think like a Voodoo kind of situation or something. Okay. But yeah, okay. you can watch both of them from the comfort of your own house, which is nice. So you could break it up over like 5 days if you needed to, because the first one's 2.5 hours long, and it was so long. The first one when I rewatched it and Autumn watched it for the first time a few weeks back, my TV went to dim mode. It was like. Oh, you haven't touched the controller in a while.
That's how long you've been Duning.
And I was like, why is this scene so dark? I can barely see the Chalamet on the screen. I need to see that Chalamet.
There's so many things I need to watch. I feel like I should watch the Fallout show. I'm not like a big Fallout guy, but everyone's just saying it's good, and that's a big surprise to me. So
I
feel like I should give it a chance. I haven't finished or haven't caught up on Shogun yet, though. So
I've got 2 episodes left of Fallout. And I am also not a big Fallout guy by any means. Like I played the first 2 games way, way back in the day when they came out. I never clicked with any of the 3D ones that I tried. So I've never played significant amounts of those games or anything. This nails like the Fallout aesthetic, as you have probably absorbed it from like general gamersphere stuff. Mm-hmm, and it's just really good on its own. Like it's very funny. It's very charming. The 3 main characters do an absolutely outstanding job of just like being good, and also like kind of representing 3 different play styles that you could play Fallout as. Which I think it's kind of nifty. It's very video gamey without feeling very video gamey. The characters keep getting pulled, like there's obviously like a main quest, like the chick is trying to save her dad, and then they just keep getting pulled away from the main quest to side quests to do random stuff.
Of course.
So it's just a neat structure, and Walton Goggins is amazing. I can't remember the name of the actor, the main chick, but she was on Yellow Jackets.
She's one of the main characters in, what's that animated show on Netflix?
That one, yeah, absolutely.
The League of Legends one. Jesus Christ, what's it called?
Jinx? Not Jinx.
Might be the character. What the fuck is that show called? Oh my God.
Arcane.
Jesus.
Yeah. Oh. Maybe she plays Jinx or something. I don't know where I got that from. Yeah. But she has she's amazing. She was great in Yellow Jackets, and she's great in this. I would recommend watching it. Like it's a pretty breezy 8-hour like show. Like it's a fun watch.
I think I want to check it out. My relationship with Fallout is weird because I was such like a big Bethesda guy back when because Oblivion was my life when I was 15, and Fallout 3 came after it. I was not familiar with the original games. I liked Fallout 3. I just didn't like it as much as I liked Oblivion, and I don't think I've liked a single Fallout after that. New Vegas is the one that everybody loves. Yeah. I played New Vegas, and I liked a lot of its ideas, but it just would never fucking work on my Xbox, and I would constantly lose progress or things would get glitched, and I just couldn't get into it. Fallout 4, I absolutely did not fucking enjoy. I actually thought that like the gun handling and like the combat and that was pretty good, but the rest of it I just did not click with, and I haven't played a Bethesda game since. Obviously, I go back and play Skyrim every once in a while. But that's more of like a fantasy fix. Yeah. And I think the reason I like those games is it's just you exist in a world and there's towns and you're walking around just doing shit. You know, there's no like the driving force of those games isn't what makes me like them. Like, I don't care about the main quest. I don't even really care about like the skill progression or anything like that. I'm just like, yeah, just like existing in this fantasy world and just doing fantasy stuff. But Bethesda's just getting worse and worse at that somehow. So
yeah, I've heard New Vegas is the best for that, where like you can literally like role play a doctor in that game. Yeah. Right? Like and like do like pacifist runs and things like that. The game doesn't kind of force you down any kind of given paths or anything. And that's always super interesting.
I wonder if it had worked if I would have ended up loving it, because I think I played a lot of it when it came out and was probably enjoying parts of it. I really don't remember. I just remember the frustration of the lost saves and stuff, and I've just never gone back to it since.
Such a bummer, man. I've barely touched a video game in the last like week or so, or like in the last like 2 weeks or so.
Damn.
I had the bad brain real bad there for a while, Chris. Like I was bad braining so bad that like I couldn't do anything but lay on the couch.
Couldn't even game,
just,
dude.
Do what?
You couldn't even game. That's how you know it's bad.
Dude, I couldn't even like put on a YouTube video. Like I was literally like I wouldn't even turn on the TV. Like I was just laying on the couch and like
darkness imprisoning me, all that I see.
Oh, dude, was me, man. That was me. I just sitting there listening to Christian metal music. That's what I was.
Damn.
No, I'm just kidding. I wasn't doing that.
That's the real dark.
I was too depressed to put on music, and so.
Yeah. Oh God.
I got through it though. I'm okay. I'm
glad.
I'm better.
I mean, I beat Dark Souls 2. I did the DLC. That was fun.
Yeah.
I had never fought. What's his name? Sir Alon. Is that his name?
I think so.
In
it's been a while.
Iron the samurai dude. This is a fucking samurai dude.
Oh yeah, sir. I always call him Alone because it's Alone.
Yeah.
The one with the like horrible fucking run up to him. Yeah.
Oh god, that run up stinks.
Yeah.
And I guess I just never explored enough to do it. But I got over there and
it's miserable.
Thankfully I beat him on like my third try because that run up stinks.
I can't remember if it was a rumor or if it was confirmed that if you did like that was like an honorable duel situation and he would have a different like death animation if you didn't use a shield or something. Is that
I think it's something like if you do a no hit,
if you don't get
hit, then he will like kill himself at the end of the battle.
Excellent, thank you, From. We appreciate this, From Software.
He got owned so hard that he commits seppuku.
maybe that's what it is. Yeah, I remember something. Yeah, I remember.
I'm gonna Google it. Let's find out.
My headphone cable was all tangled up there. I couldn't get free. So if I sounded weird, that was why.
Let's see. All right, I'm watching the video now. He's getting cooked. This person has full health. His moves are very easy to dodge, which is good. Okay. And let's see. Yep, he's doing it.
Yeah.
He's lifting up his sword and sticking it through his belly. All right. Yep, he did it. Fun.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess
he was naked too, which is insult to injury.
Can you imagine, like, everything from the perspective of the Dark Souls boss is always very hilarious to me. Like, you're just sitting, usually in this enclosed space, you know, just, like, counting your souls, I guess. I don't know what these bosses are doing on their off time.
They're just pondering. They got nothing to do but ponder.
They're just sitting
there
pondering.
At least King Vendrick paces.
And then all of a sudden, like, a naked guy with a Joker hat comes in. And it's, like, wielding, like, a sword that's broken, and you're like, this is just not even worth my time. Like, I'm not even going to interrupt my pondering to deal with this.
No.
And then it just...
No, you do not interrupt pondering until you realize you're at 50% HP.
and then you have to commit seppuku. Because it's just too depressing for you to exist
it's
anymore.
It's too depressing.
I wonder if you could make a video game from the perspective, like, I know, like, Dungeon Keeper games let you kind of do that, right? Like, from the perspective of the bad guy, like, where you're building dungeons to, specifically to kill heroes. But I wonder if you could do it from, like, the boss perspective of a video game, where you actually, like, got to kill the hero character. That'd be pretty
You're
fun.
Super OP, and they have to come to your room to fight you.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Eventually, somebody might just be good enough at dodging that they finally beat you.
Yeah, like, you sit there in your room, and you just come up with ideas for spells. Like, I'm a poison guy. Like, maybe I'll do a 3 blast on you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to, like, build your, I don't know. It seems like there could be something there for that.
Something's cooking there.
Do you want to talk about some little freaks?
Let's do it, dude. There's so many little freaks in this episode.
Dude, I am... We'll talk about it, but when she brings out that fucking creature, I about lost my shit. I lost my shit.
Unparalleled moment in television history. Like, that's some shit.